Recording is on.
Great. Well, welcome everyone to the February 10th, 2021 meeting of the Credentials Community Group. You can see a link to the agenda in the chat. And if you are in IRC, it's also as a topic. Today, we are going to get some work item updates on Universal Wallet, the Traceability API project, and an update from the Secure Data Storage. And I also thought I would quickly go over the pertinent dates for the upcoming CCG election, which will be held in 1 month on February 10th. Okay, so IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. You do not have to be a paid member of the W3C to be a member of the Credential Community Group. However, you will need to have a W3 account to sign the contributor license agreement in order to join the Credentials Community Group. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call will be archived at the CCG Meetings Archive link. We use IRC to queue speakers during the call as well as take minutes. So all attendees should type present plus in either the Jitsi chat or the IRC to be listed as an attendee in the transcript. You can put yourself on a queue by typing Q plus, and if you want to make a notation of what you want your comment to be, you can put Q plus and type a note, and you can put that in either the IRC or in the Jitsi chat as well. If you see myself or Wayne or other co-chairs, type Q question mark. That is us looking for the Q. But if you want to be on the Q, just do Q plus. Okay, so let's do scribe selection. Do we have any volunteers?
I can scribe today, Heather.
Really? Awesome. Thank you so much. Great, you're on top of it. Makes it easy to have a volunteer. Great. Okay, so let's do introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? I'm looking to see if there's anyone new. Is there anyone on the call that would like to reintroduce themselves? Or actually, wait, is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? I always get these mixed up a little bit. I don't think we do have anyone new. Is there anyone that hasn't introduced themselves in a while that would like to reintroduce themselves, maybe had a job change or anything? Let's see, I can look at the reintroductions. Chris Winzecki, do you want to reintroduce yourself? Did you recently reintroduce yourself?
Hi, Heather. No, I haven't. I can reintroduce myself.
Great.
So I'm Chris Winzecki. I'm the head of product for Highland Credentials, what used to be Learning Machine before we were acquired by Highland out of Cleveland. So I'm leading that initiative there from the product standpoint and have been on these calls for a few years. Nice to see everybody again.
Great. Thanks, Chris. And I apologize. I always mispronounce your name because I don't think I've ever heard it pronounced. Except maybe the first time we met, so.
You're not the only one, don't worry.
Please accept my apology. Okay, well, let's see, moving on. We have a lot of stuff today to go over, so. Okay, announcements and reminders. I'm looking at the announcement page. I know that Kalia, we've got the Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop, and I know I saw a pull request to have the date changed, and I'm not sure if it, I guess it didn't get pushed. But, Kalia, what is that date change again? It's like March.
Sure. It's March,
It's March 8th, 10th, and 12th. So it's the second week of March on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it's a half day each of those days.
Okay, great. And I'll make
sure.
Sorry,
Kalia, could you repeat those dates? I missed them.
Sorry, March 8th, 10th, and 12th. And we're inviting folks who are from, who work as biometric scientists in biometric companies, folks who work in identity management and build identity systems, and folks from civil society concerned about both of the above.
Great. Does anyone else have any other announcements?
It may be time to start announcing IIW. It's coming up in April 20th to 22nd.
Great. April, what were those dates again?
20th to 22nd.
Great. Okay. Great. And I will also announce that an email went out yesterday announcing the CCG election. For the link. I think it makes sense to talk about it here. I want to just go over a brief timeline of it. Wayne, you're on the queue.
Oh, I can wait till after the election.
Okay. I didn't know if you had a comment about the election. So if you guys look at the election timeline, we had to wait to announce the election until we had approval on the 2021 charter amendment, which we had been discussing. And, the time for any, issues with that, ended yesterday, Monday evening. Monday evening. And so Tuesday we announced it. And so, voting will open for the election on March 10th. That is in, 1 month from now, starting from yesterday until, February 23rd is the nomination period. Anyone can nominate themselves, and to nominate yourself, you have to send your name and affiliation and a statement to the list. To be able to nominate yourself and vote in the election, you must have been a signed member of the CCG by yesterday. So if you join today, unfortunately, you will not be able to self-nominate or vote in the election, but anyone who has been a member by yesterday will be able to vote and is eligible to self-nominate. The nomination period will conclude at midnight Pacific on 2/23. And then on the following day on 2/24 at the meeting there, we will have any candidates be able to speak at the CCG meeting. Voting will open on 3/10. Which is a Wednesday, and you will have 1 week to vote. Voting will close again at midnight Pacific on 3/17. We will be using ranked choice. The specific details of the voting procedure will be announced on or before February 24th. I will note I have found a really interesting university. I think Cornell University has a free ranked choice I don't want to say application, but you can use it to do ranked choice voting for exactly like this type of community. So we're going to test that and see if that could potentially work. We hope to have election results by March 22nd, and we'd like to have the new chair start on March 24th. This is a 3-year chair seats. I will conclude my chair seat, and then Wayne will conclude his chair seat. And each time a new chair seat opens up, concludes and is open for election or reelection, it will be for a new 3-year seat. So, let's see if there's anyone on the queue regarding the details of the election. Wayne, you're up.
I also just wanted to, follow up with a notification that the 2-week period for the charter amendment has passed without strong objections sustained. I don't believe there were any strong objections to it, but things that might have become strong objections if we didn't handle them. And we've made some updates to the draft, and you know, it seems that everyone is okay with it. It was on the mailing list. It was in GitHub. So I will be moving forward to working with Yvonne and updating the charter officially on the website. So I just wanted to give an update there.
Thanks, Wayne. Manu, you're up, and I'm happy to scribe for you.
Thank you. Just a quick note about another voting site, OpaVote, O-P-A-V-O-T-E. That is useful for doing all kinds of ranked choice voting. We've used it before, and it works really well, and it's free. Just putting that out there. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Manu. That's great. We'll take a look at that. I'm going to make a note of that. Great. Okay. I hope that we have various people interested in running for co-chair. Wayne and I are very excited to see who is interested. And we do think that I personally would like to see multiple nominations. I'd like to see us have to do voting, because that always, you know, makes you have choices. Choices are always good. Okay, so moving on. Progress on action items. Okay. So we have a couple of weeks ago, during the verifiable request meeting, a proposed work item number 179 was proposed. In the last week or so, Gabe Cohen, who proposed this, he initially proposed it as being a lead. He is unable to do that. And so, I don't think that we have two formal leads on this. So I wanted to alert the community that if there are not two people from different companies that want to take a lead on this, this is likely going to be closed without becoming a new work item. Is there anyone on the call that would want to take, to be a co-owner for this new work item? Okay. Does not sound like that. I will make a note in this that if we do not have some new leads to take on in the next, I'll give it 14 days, we'll close this issue until someone is able to take the lead on this. The only other issue I wanted to bring up was issue 136. As prerequisite to close it. This was the issue that had to do with learnings from last co-chair election. There has been a lot of discussion on this thread, and this is the thread that we used to resolve the concerns for the election charter amendment. And so since we have done that, I will close this. Wayne, do we need to leave this open until your changes go live?
Yeah, I can make a note in the issue that I will publish it onto the website, and then that'll be that.
Okay, great. I just like to close out issues that we get done with. Great. Okay. All right. So now we're on to the updates. So we've got updates from the Universal Wallet, and we've got Mike Prorok and Ori Steele. You're both on the call?
I am as well, and I'll probably let Ori take the lead on that. So,
okay, sure. Great. I'll let you guys decide between updates on that. I hand it over to you.
All right. There is the link to the spec. So we've made some progress on the universal wallet interop spec. There's been some healthy chatter on GitHub issues around potential integration points with Hyperledger Ares, with some specs in the OpenID Foundation regarding credential issuance, you know, for JWT and linked data proof based credentials with OpenID Connect. So if those are of any interest to you, there are threads in the GitHub issues on the repo I linked regarding them. We also have published some updated React components and Storybook components, which are a particular UI framework for building small components. So that there's been updates to the React components that implement some of the interfaces. And then there's also been updates to the sample implementation and the plugins for the sample implementation. So the updates for that are mostly updating to newer versions of underlying cryptographic dependencies. And the plugin, the main, I think one of the most exciting plugin updates is the encrypted data vault plugin for the universal wallet now supports basically single click or replication between the local wallet content and a remote encrypted data vault. And that's, encrypted data vaults is a separate specification that's being worked on in Diff and the W3C CCG joint work item. But the universal wallet, spec describes some connection points to that work. And there's actually working code now, and React components if you're wanting to build, support for encrypted data vaults into your wallet. I think that's all of the updates for the universal wallet.
Great. Thanks. Wow. That was really fast. Is there anyone that has any questions? Manu.
Yeah, just real quick. I'm wondering, Ori, I haven't had the chance to really look deeply at the spec. I've looked at it a couple of times. What's the timeline? Like, what's the expected timeline and kind of what's the roadmap? What are we hoping to achieve in step one, and then what's step two, and when's the timeline for that, and so on and so forth?
It's a great question. So I think what we're looking to do right now is describe in JSON-LD connection points between verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, cryptocurrency, remote key management software, encrypted data vaults. Like, what we're doing is basically aggregating JSON-LD and JSON objects and describing them and their relationships in a spec. And that's going to keep happening over time as people find something that's valuable that they want to express in the specification. They will add examples of it and we'll make sure the context defines all the terms and that kind of thing. There isn't a, it's a CCG work item. I would expect at some point we would, you know, if it's successful, want to promote it into a more rigorous standards process. And, you know, but I don't know what the timeline for that is. And there's lots of other things that we might want to do before we try to do that.
Great. Thanks. David C, you're up next.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. You probably know that in the SSF project, there's a universal backup service is being developed by one of the partners in the project. And one of the issues that was raised at the meeting we had this week was, well, what happens if the wallet backs up everything to the universal backup service and then they drop their phone down the toilet or it gets stolen or something? How do they recover it? And they said, well, that's still an item to be developed. Have you got any thoughts on that, please?
Yeah, so the feature I mentioned about encrypted data vaults is one solution to that particular problem. So today, the way that the plugin works is you can replicate local wallet content to a remote server, and that remote server holds that content in an encrypted format. You can replicate that with keys that are not just in one place, but you can, for example, encrypt that content for multiple recipients. So if you include your local phone bound keys in that list and it's just containing those, then you're kind of screwed when your phone is destroyed. But if you include your desktop keys and your phone keys there and you lose your phone, you can still recover with your desktop keys. So that multiple recipients feature of encrypted data vaults is the feature that we're using to support protection against hardware-bound keys that might be destroyed.
Oh, that's good, right? I didn't realize that. So if I've got a laptop and a mobile phone, I could use both keys and then back up from one to the other.
Yeah, and just to be clear, that's a feature of encrypted data vaults and their structure, and the universal wallet interop spec is just relying on encrypted data vaults to support that feature.
Aha, okay. So, and if the keys are held in the hardware on both devices, that's not particularly a problem, is it?
No, the keys can be held in hardware on devices. They can be accessed through a remote key management software. The specific location of keys that are used with encrypted data vaults is actually out of scope even for the encrypted data vault spec. So it's expected that as long as you have the ability to perform key agreement and digital signatures, you can use keys that are stored anywhere with encrypted data vaults.
Excellent. Right. Thanks. I'll feed that back. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Michael, I think you're up next.
I think someone was on cue.
Yeah, I think I am. Ori, like you and I both sit on in the encrypted data vault working group meetings and stuff. My sense is that we're still in the early kind of specification stage of the encrypted data vault, yet I'm less familiar with the universal wallet effort. And it sounds like you're fairly well along using actual implementations of an EDV. Can you kind of just explain the timing and coordination and just how those two come together?
Sure. So encrypted data vaults were originally funded as part of the Department of Homeland Security work years ago. I'm not completely familiar with exactly when that initial funding and development work had happened. But as a result of that, I think Digital Bazaar was the first vendor to implement support for the API, and they obviously wrote the initial specification for encrypted data vaults. We implemented support for that specification before it was even moved to DIF. And so we have an implementation, Digital Bazaar has an implementation, SecureKey has an implementation, and they all implement the same version of the encrypted data vaults API. And that interface is what we've built interoperability support in the universal wallet around. So if that interface changes, the universal wallet integration would break, but I would make sure it got updated depending on what the confidential storage or whatever the secure data store working group decides to do to the spec. But as you're probably aware, you know, I'm obviously like, what we have works for at least three vendors, right? And so I think in terms of timing, there are features that we're still working on in encrypted data vaults and confidential storage work, the secure data store working group. And we'll continue to work on those. But any changes that we do to the specification would have to be implemented by, you know, Transmute and SecureKey and Digital Bazaar in order for us to be caught up to that newer version of the specification. And while we wait for such changes to ever happen, we have working implementations that are interoperable.
Great. Thanks, Ori, for that. Wayne, you're next on the queue.
Yeah, so just two things. The first is highlighting the importance of working on these open specs in terms of governments that rely on them. I think there was recently Experian pulled out of a government deal, right, and kind of left 2 million accounts unaccounted for. If it were built on interoperable open standards, then there might have been more vendors willing to do that instead of just letting the ball drop for all those people. So, I think the work that we're doing here is important. The second thing is that a part of the vocabulary that might be useful to folks here, a lot of you probably already heard of it, but there's something called the mud test. I'll share a link to the article in the chat. Matthew Green, who is a cryptographer at Johns Hopkins, came up with this term, I believe, and it means that if you slipped and fell into the mud and all your devices were ruined, or as David was saying, dropped your phone into the toilet, would you be able to recover your data, right? And he describes it as a property of these secure systems where presumably if you have true custody of it and you lost all your key material, then you can't, right? Whether or not that's appropriate for all use cases, we can, you know, discuss if you need guardianship models or things like that. But it's kind of a useful concept to be able to refer to that succinctly. So just wanted to share that in case you're interested. Thanks.
Thanks, Wayne. Adrian, you're up next.
Yes. Those of us that see the world in terms of authorization servers look at the issue or the difference between a mobile wallet and a custodial wallet. And I'm wondering, how does the universal wallet spec deal with or doesn't deal with custodial wallets?
Great question. It doesn't have an opinion on what type of wallet you have. It has a concept of profiles and grouping of content. So you could represent content for multiple different personas, for lack of a better word. Your wallet has things that you would only share with certain groups of people, like, you know, there are certain credentials you're expected to provide to, you know, certain authority members, and you're kind of expected to keep those in your wallet. There's other content in your wallet that you might only share with, like, your best friend. And the purpose of the universal wallet interop spec is to describe wallet content in JSON LD. And it doesn't really take an opinion on whether or not that wallet content is exclusive to a custodial or to a self-sovereign identity wallet or an enterprise agent wallet or, you know, some travel pass wallet. Like, it doesn't care about what kind of wallet you have. All that it cares about is describing wallet content in an interoperable JSON LD format.
Okay. I have a follow-up question to that, but I'll put myself back on the queue then.
Oh, Adrian, do you want to just, since it's a follow-up, if you can be quick, we'll just keep it flow.
In today's GNAP meeting, the issue came up as to how will GNAP make sure that we are not entirely, that we're not locking out SSI-type initiatives, standards, by being too HTTP-centric. And so the question that I have relative to Universal Wallet is, if the custodial implementation of Universal Wallet is HTTP-based, you know, for obvious reasons, but the mobile wallet isn't, mostly because it's hard to do HTTP on mobile devices, how do we square that circle, and how do we then present, you know, the relationship between DITCOM, for instance, and other messaging protocols in the context of what we're all doing here?
Yeah, so the interfaces that the wallet spec describes are abstract, and the idea is that those wallet interfaces might be implemented over HTTP, over GNAP, over DITCOM, over HTTP signatures, over OAuth, OpenID Connect flows. Like, we don't know how those wallet interfaces would be implemented, and we don't know even whether or not they're all exposed or not exposed externally or only internally. We only just describe those interfaces as they relate to wallet content. So the purpose of the spec is to say things like, private keys can be used to transfer cryptocurrency, but they can also be used to make verifiable presentations. The spec doesn't talk about how you get a verifiable presentation to a verifier. It doesn't talk about protocols. It just says, like, this is the relationship between wallet content and, you know, other standards that exist out there that rely on key material.
That's clear. Thank you.
Great. Rovin, you're up next.
Yes, thank you. I think connected to this conversation, there is a new work group being worked on. There's a charter I just dropped into the chat. I think the title at the moment is Wallet Security, and it's all about the things around. it started with conversations with the authority in Germany, which is issuing passports. They want to understand what wallet security features are supported in an interaction with someone. So is this wallet really using, I don't know, the hardware, or can be keys exposed? And these kind of questions came up. So we drafted the charter. It's something we want to get as broad audience involved. So I just want to plug this. Check it out. There's a mailing list now. If you guys are interested in this conversation, we would love to have as much representation from the community on this and to drive these kind of questions around security forward. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben. How do you see folks like doing that? Like, should they respond directly to that document?
Fair question. I think happy for people to make comments into the document. I will share the link of the mailing group because we wanted to have a mailing list to facilitate the conversation because it's more inclusive. So I'm going to drop a link if people can send bigger comments or general questions to that mailing list. That might be the easiest way.
Yeah, that would be great if you can send an email to the list with the link and the specific ask, and the context of, you know, who you want to have a comment. That would be really fantastic. Okay, Manu, you're up next and I'll scribe for you.
Thanks, Heather. Ori, I'm wondering if like the universal wallet spec threw me, the name threw me in the beginning. It sounds more like a wallet contents specification, like what's in your wallet type specification. Is that the intent? Like, it is going to document everything that people are putting in, or you know, a large set of things that people are putting in wallets, so that when we move our wallet contents from one provider to another, that other provider has some semblance of an idea of how to treat that, the data in the wallet. The wallet application kind of knows the MIME type, knows what's in there, knows the format, and can then kind of manipulate it based on that format. Are there other parts of Universal Wallet where you feel that are like, I know they're like, you said that they're like abstract protocols. I'm wondering if it should be split into specifications, or if you're kind of like, no, we're just keeping it as one for now. What's the thinking, kind of design thinking around that?
So you should read the spec. The introduction says basically what you just said, which is that this is a specification that describes content that might exist in a digital wallet and some abstract interfaces, not protocols, interfaces that are related to those wallet content. So it doesn't talk about, like, it may make reference to things like DIDCOM or HTTP, but its purpose is to basically explain that key material is related to verifiable credentials and presentations, and that your wallet might have keys and credentials in it. And it's basically just kind of unifying those data models. And the interfaces are described in the same specification, and there was some discussion about moving them out to a separate specification, which after many comments on GitHub, I'm convinced is not a good idea for us at this point in time. Maybe in the future it would be. And the main reason for that is that if you imagine moving wallet content from one vendor to the other, but the new vendor doesn't support cryptocurrency transfers, for example, how did you capture that? How did you express that to the user before they made that transfer? Or are you just going to like rely on the user to kind of review all of the features of the new wallet vendor and realize what they're losing when they transfer? So those interfaces are important to be included in the specification, and we need to have some way of describing which wallet vendors support what kind of interfaces. Some wallets only support making of payments with, you know, credit cards, and other wallets support issuing of verifiable credentials in JSON-LD, and other wallets only support issuing of credentials as Hyperledger India non-creds. You would not want to transfer from one vendor to the other without understanding what you are gaining and giving up. And the interfaces are part of how we describe that today. So to answer your question, yes, the interfaces describe that, but they describe it in the abstract and they reference the wallet content itself. Most of the specification is just about providing a consistent set of definitions around concepts that you see in wallets.
Thanks for that explanation, Ori, and thanks for this great work. We're going to move on to the next one. We had a lot of questions with that topic. Thanks for fielding all of those. Next, we're going to have an update from the traceability API update. Mike Prorok, are you going to do that, or is Ori going to do that as well? Are you
I'll take that side. We figured we'd divide and conquer. And it's actually a traceability vocab. I think I hammered out actually the VCHTTP API was on my brain from just a bunch of bug stuff going on over there. And so I think when I hammered my email over to you, I think I had phrased it as API, but it's actually vocabulary. And yes, Ori has posted the link in there. So this kind of kicked off really with the start of the SVIP a little bit beforehand from some good headway from Transmute, but I think the community's well adopted it. We've now got four or five companies pretty heavily engaged with this and are getting some good visibility in, especially from folks on the GS1 side, et cetera. So, but the key goals from the vocabulary project is to standardize a set of vocabularies that are common across supply chain vendors interacting with items that then need to issue verifiable credentials based on the standardized set of vocabulary. All right. And an easy way of thinking about that or examples of that is there's no reason to go redefine location when it's already been, you know, or an address, right, when that's already been done over in schema.org or GS1 or something else, right? And so it's really a way of consolidating that information up and then to provide additional vocabulary where there are gaps in the vocabularies that are out there around, particularly on the JSON LD side of things, that provide us the ability to do things like, in our case, clearly describe what happens for an agricultural inspection or a specific type of agricultural inspection, right? So be it a phytosanitary inspection or some chemical testing, contamination testing, you know, et cetera. And then similar use cases exist and are documented up around, you know, oil and gas, steel, et cetera. So if any of you are working on supply chain and kind of describing those kinds of things, we definitely would welcome, you know, interaction on that side. We are heading towards a I would say like an annual major release schedule is what we're targeting. So probably Q1 will be our release. At least this is kind of the working notion, at least for now, but we are going to pin a version of this, at the end of this month. And the reason we're going to pin that version is to allow a clean, set of, you know, version vocab objects to be used on across the VCHTTP API for the supply chain companies testing interop on that side of things. So we're basically using these as the payload objects, right, that are actually being signed as credentials to be passed over the wire. So I'll pause there for any questions. So
Wayne, you're on the queue.
Thanks. Yeah. So, just a question, to Mike as an implementer. What would you say are the best places to get started, starting to look at the traceability vocab? Just a follow on comment is that, what would be really interesting is, participating in the whole flow of issuance, storage and verification.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I fully agree on that kind of like working this into that kind of broader flow and everything else. And I think this project obviously is going to be very closely related with things that are exchanging JSON LD of credentials or, you know, other, you know, types of objects like this. Whether that's over HTTP, like in the VCHTTP API or potentially in other items that are speaking JSON LD or some kind of linked data. The easiest way to get started, we've been bumping up the documentation quite a bit. But really it starts like if you were to add like, hey, I have new inspection type or, you know, shipment type of X, right? The way to do that is really to start with a JSON schema definition. And we've got that kind of called out. And then there's a series of steps where right now the JSON schema is being used, thanks to some black magic from Ori that we're updating now, but is being used to generate a JSON LD file that corresponds to that. And then we've got a set of generators that generate test suites against that and validate everything kind of through the path.
There are obviously active improvements to this. I think that, you know, the schema to LD and back to schema and stuff like that, that's something that comes up a lot. So, you know, I think we're making some headway on how to do that in a reliable programmatic way, cleanly, right? And in a way that will scale. But yeah, it's, you know, some other benefits I think that we're seeing internally is, just thinking about use cases that are coming up for this, is like in terms of generation of data for demonstration purposes or validating use cases or test cases, looks like we may even be able to do things like reuse some of the generators we're putting into this that generate valid and invalid, right? Failing test cases, for, like data, to generate sample data to work with, whether from an analytics standpoint or to demonstrate a particular use case, say I need a whole bunch of agricultural shipments and things like that, right? But yeah, if you find any areas, you know, in the documentation that aren't clear, please, do, open issues on that. That's an area we're trying to really make this accessible to folks that have not necessarily even touched in some cases anything beyond just JSON schema in the past, right? You know, make this pretty friendly to working with the enterprise, right? Most of our customers are in the enterprise. I think most of the supply chain companies are as well. So we're trying to make this pretty approachable.
Great. Manu, you're next on the queue.
Yep, thanks. So I've got a question about, you know, the traceability vocabulary. It seems like it's on a trajectory to grow to the size of like schema.org. So for those of you that don't know, schema.org has like multiple thousands of vocabulary terms and definitions and many versions. Is the idea, and you know, I mean, as you know, supply chain traceability is like it's a huge, huge, market. It's a huge area. What's the current thinking on how to manage, you know, that growth? Is it, you know, you're going to try to do something on the same trajectory as what, you know, Google did with schema.org, meaning that it's going to have thousands of vocabulary terms by the time you're done with it? Or, are you thinking of kind of splitting it up over time where there's going to be kind of a general core vocabulary and then there's going to be one for like oil and gas and one for steel and one for timber and one for, you know, strawberries. Thoughts on how to kind of manage that growth?
No, it's an excellent question. And it's something that, you know, I think you've teed on to like one of the issues with these kinds of vocabs. Like there's the underlying issue too of we don't want to be duplicating things that are done elsewhere, right? This is a lot of this was spurred by filling the gaps. And so I think one of the things first and foremost is to try to avoid reuse and to point back where appropriate, or where something already exists, whether that's on schema.org or GS1, right? We're pointing, you know, in the EPCIS object, et cetera, right? We're pointing over to that stuff where it's there, and leveraging that. And that's one of the beauties of linked data. But I think also there is this notion that, you know, if you want to think from an object oriented term, right? I think you hit on something key, whereas there is this notion of common elements that are used across the supply chain. So things like places, locations, bills of lading, right? Things like that. And then there are subject matter type terms, and that's really how it's structured now. And so like in our case, and in this has not been, like we as a group have not fully standardized this yet, but I think the way it's leaning from discussions in the issues and seeing what commits are coming in is that we will start seeing patterns that have things like inspection as a parent object and then a particular subtype of inspection being an ag inspection, then a subtype of that being some particular form of like contamination inspection. Where on the steel side, right, you may have an inspection, like I know in Ori's case, like it's typically like mill test reports and things like that. Those are also a type of inspection. So it gives you the flexibility to go implement an API that speaks inspection that may have additional capabilities around a subject matter expertise. Like in our case, ag or, you know, MavenNet, right, focusing on oil and gas, et cetera. So, but yeah, I think that pattern breakout of common elements and then kind of commodity specific or trade specific, use cases, to segment out the vocabulary is how this is going to run at the moment anyways.
Great. I'm going to close the queue for this topic so we have time, but we'll still let the two folks on it go. So Wayne, you're up next.
Thanks. I just wanted to mention about how there's going to be scheduled a kickoff for the infrastructure task force next week or the following, depending on people's availability. Look for that doodle, but figuring out how to manage these different contexts in a vendor-neutral way would definitely be something we're very interested in discussing in the infrastructure task force. Whether, you know, we collaborate with W3ID and figure out how to amp those efforts up, right? That could be a possible gateway. We could potentially talk to W3 management because they seem to have an interest in the kind of work we're doing out of this community group. We can talk about the potential of interoperability profiles with other industry-specific standards, such as those from GS1 or other groups and other sectors. So those are all really interesting for the prospect of these companion interoperability specifications, so we're not reinventing the wheel here, and also having a vendor-neutral way to host everything that has a robust governance process that enterprises and governments could like. So W3ID.org, looks like a great solution, as Ori is commenting. And secondly, a little bit more time to just this is kind of making me think about a potential work item, which is probably like a fantasy work item for me, where you can actually specify the orchestration of these credentials in a workflow, right, using some kind of domain-specific language. The closest that comes to mind is the business process modeling notation, which is pretty well used in industry in terms of how workflows work in different enterprises. If we could reference different schemas or contexts and even add constraints to them, such as they must have this field or belong to this family, that could be extremely interesting to just model the overall flow. If you're technical and looking into this, there's a mathematical modeling language called PetriNets that is isomorphic, some researchers think, to the business process modeling notation. So those might be pieces of what could be a very interesting work item for the orchestration of all of these interactions instead of just specifying the contexts. Thanks.
Great. Okay, Ori, you're up next, and then we're going to switch over to the secure data storage update.
Yeah, I was just going to say the way to collaborate on these items is in GitHub and GitHub issues. If you're not sure whether an issue exists, open it and ask your questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Ori. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, community, for lots of great discussion. Secure data storage, we'd love to hear an update, and I apologize that we're not going to be able to give you the full 15 minutes, but take 9.
Sure, no problem. So I'll take this. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So I'm Dmitry Zagadulin. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Secure Data Storage Working Group, working on the confidential storage spec alongside Kalia Young, Tobias Looker, as well as our editors Manu, Ori, and Daniel Buckner. So I've got, hold on one second, I've got some links here for you. Okay, so this is the link. Most of the activity that takes place is in this GitHub repo, confidential storage. We have weekly calls on Thursday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern, which we encourage you to join. This is the link to the spec itself. This is the link to the slide deck that sort of introduces the confidential storage spec and the working group that we presented at the Div face-to-face, so please take a look. Talks briefly on what kind of problem we're solving, which layers, what our charter is, and so on, so please take a look at that. Here is another slightly more in-depth presentations on some of the topics that we've been working on, such as the structure of authorization. Many of you are already familiar with the working group and so are probably just interested to know, so what's new? We've had a couple of things of interest. We now have an example implementation by Ori Steele in the confidential storage repo itself. So right there alongside the spec is an example open source implementation that we encourage you to take a look at, to contribute, to add tests and test vectors to make sure that we're all interoperating. The conversations so far have mostly been discussions about authorization methods and replication use cases. This week's call, for example, is going to be on the interface between the lower level encrypted data vault spec and the sort of higher level identity hub spec, where we're trying to nail down the interop layer between the two so that work on the two layers can work in parallel. So, touching real quick on Adrian's question. No, it wasn't Adrian. Sorry. Michael Herman's question earlier about, the state of the spec versus the implementation. So we are like many, standards groups where we've come together after several implementations have been made so that our implementation discussion are informed by implementation experience. However, we are, the group is also, have laid down use cases. There's a separate use case document in the spec repo, discussed on previous calls all of the various components and layers and are now moving towards, finalizing the remaining pieces of the EDV spec so that we can work on more complex problems. So I'm going to open the queue to the questions. We only have a couple of minutes left, but are there any questions for me? And thank you, Ori, for your did meme link in chat. So questions?
There's no one on the queue, so if you want to drill down into a specific area, or if you have questions, add yourself to the queue.
Sure. So I don't have any particular questions. Again, invite everybody interested in confidential storage and in areas where confidential storage intersects that of wallet, migration, wallet backup to join the group, join the calls, contribute to the repo.
Okay, I guess that was lightning fast. We don't have any questions from the community. Wayne, you're on the queue.
Yeah, would love to just zoom out a bit. Those were some excellent updates. Thank you. And I'd like to hear more about the contextualization of the work. What are some other major pieces of the ecosystem that you see your work interacting with, and in what way?
Oh, great question. Thanks. Thanks, Wayne. So, if you look at, either of the slide deck links, earlier on IRC at the layer diagram, we have a couple of, logical components colored in dark red that are out of scope for this particular working group. But our work very much depends on having those components. For example, key management. This is encrypted data storage, so of course you'll need to manage encryption keys. This particular working group leaves that out of scope so that other working groups and other task forces of the CCG can specify and recommend this is what KMS interface is, these are the recommended key suites, and so on, right? So that's one set of specs that we intersect with but do not directly work on, which is key management. And the other major component is, of course, wallets, right? which we've been discussing a lot on this call. So definitely touches on the wallet formats, the universal wallet interop spec that Ori mentioned, and that sort of thing. And the third set of specs that we intersect with but do not necessarily work on directly is authorization specs. So far, the main authorization specifications that we've discussed are being considered for use with confidential storage is GNAP and authorization capabilities in terms of data model, and HTTP signatures in terms of proof of possession mechanism. So to summarize, the major other items that we intersect with: wallets, key management systems, authorization specs.
Thank you. That was a great answer.
Great, Dimitri. And if folks are interested and want to participate, they can join your call at 1 p.m. Pacific on Thursday and otherwise interact with you in the GitHub.
Thanks to our amazing scribe, Manu.
Okay. We don't have anyone else on the queue. We don't have anything else going on. So I think we are concluding this meeting on time. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.
See you next week.